south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, Johnny here again, just finishing up my morning coffee enema. No, not really, but like I said so many times before, I'm living in the land of coffee. In fact, I'm broadcasting right now, right? From the center of a gigantic coffee plantation. Actually, it's one big coffee plantation and about six or seven mom and pop small coffee plantations of a couple of acres each. Oh, and by the way, coffee planting and harvesting involves 100% manual labor. There are no machines involved at all until they get to the sorting, husking, and roasting process. Oh, and about those coffee enemas I like to make fun of. I know it's always been a kind of a California New Age woo-woo treatment, but there are, believe it or not, people who come down to Latin America because there are all kinds of strange, weird, and even somewhat conventional alternative treatments available here that may be completely illegal up in the first world and can get a doctor or practitioner in hot water. They could lose their license, get a big fine, or even end up in jail. But down here, anything goes. That said, you must use due diligence and buyer beware and all that. Anyway, yet another reason to put Latin America on your list for a Plan B escape route. And by the way, if you are price shopping for coffee, whether for oral or anal purposes, it did take me a long time, but I found some of the very best coffee in the world for around $5 a pound. Yep, it's the very stuff they sell at Starbucks and high-end coffee shops for $30 to $50 a pound. So then you might ask, how can you get some of this stuff yourself? Well, I'm not going to ship it to you, though there would be a great gringo business opportunity there, believe me. But do note, if you come down to my next Expat Wisdom Seminar, I'll lead you directly to those coffee farms where you can get it yourself and maybe even get that little boutique coffee export business of yours going. In fact, I'm ready to give you a few tips on that. Just come on down to my next seminar, which is going to be this second week in January, coming up. More on that in a week or two, so stay tuned. Now remember, I can get it for around $5 a pound in single pound units. Now, if you buy 50 or 100 pound sack, you probably can get it for $3 or $4 a pound. Remember, this is the kind of coffee they sell in those very high-end shops in first world countries, like Japan, for up to $50 a cup. No, not a pound, a cup. Which begs the question, I wonder if your colon would know the difference. Well, I'm not going to test that theory. Though I have met some Mr. and Mrs. Natural first world types down here who would certainly do the honors and a YouTube video, and if it went viral, possibly a shot at a reality show. Who knows? And I can think of the perfect guest star. How about Kim Kardashian? Episode 1, was she not born to play the part? On second thought, in her case, it might cause brain damage. That said, or maybe it should have been left unsaid, how about another absolutely true story that happened to me, well, just a couple of days ago. Now, I always mention the cars that you should and shouldn't drive down here in Latin America. And when I mention that the ideal car is usually a couple of years old, a very common workhorse kind of nondescript thing that bad guys just aren't interested in. Not a junk by any means, but something with zero glitz factor. Then people will say, but Johnny, I understand roads are so crappy in Latin America that you have to have a 4x4 to get around because when you hit one of those potholes or one of those things you call tumulos, which are massive concrete speed bumps, oftentimes unmarked. Just know that many a small compact car's undercarriage has been completely destroyed by these things. So then what should you buy? Well, if you're spending almost all of your time in a medium or large size city, you don't need a pickup truck or a 4x4. Because the potholes aren't that gigantic in the cities, they're being repaired all the time, and the tumulos are rather small because so many cars have bottomed out on them that most of them are only half as dangerous as they once were. However, if you do a lot of highway and boonie driving, a 4x4 or a pickup truck is a very good idea. And even though I'm against SUVs because they're targets down here, they do ride a lot higher, so they'll get you over the humps and the potholes and the tumulos just fine. Even so, no matter what you're driving, you'll hit some teeth rattlers every so often, and you'll even spill your beer on occasion. Guaranteed. Which is another reason I don't recommend driving at night, because new massive potholes and tumulos will pop up when you least expect them. Anyway, it was a couple of days ago when I finally realized that I was driving the absolute perfect car for Latin America. Turns out it was a very rainy day. This is the height of the rainy season, by the way. And I was picking up some stuff at a local Office Depot. And when I finished shopping, I ran out of the place in the pouring rain. And by the way, a lot of Latin businesses, especially in upscale neighborhoods and most all first world franchises, will have, during the rainy season, a parking lot guard playing double duty. 99% of the times, these little guys in uniform, and they are little because this is Latin America, will be standing there with one hand on the unloaded shotgun and the other hand scratching their butt. So in the dry season, they're standing around doing nothing, and in the rainy season, they actually have a mission. They're glorified umbrella boys who will walk you to the car and keep you out of the rain. It really is a nice, courteous service, though it is a paradox. Only in Latin America might you find almost zero customer service inside a store, but when it's raining and you're out in the parking lot, you're extended all the courtesies. Suddenly, you're a valued customer. I don't get it. Anyway, I ran out of the Office Depot. The guard opened the umbrella and walked me to my car. I got in, sat down, and that's when I noticed, to my surprise, there was a young Latin lady in the passenger seat clutching her baby, giving me that wide-eyed, frantic look as if I'd just walked into an occupied stall in a ladies' restroom. Yep, that's when I realized I was in the wrong car. So it turns out that my car is so common, so ubiquitous, so milquetoast, run-of-the-mill, that though I scared the crap out of this lady, I was kind of pleased with myself. So it wasn't Alzheimer that led me to the wrong car. It was just that there were a couple of cars exactly like mine in that parking lot. So again, it wasn't Alzheimer's. At least that's what I keep telling myself. Now, where was I? Hi, I'm Johnny Mueller. Welcome to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. Just kidding. Oh yeah, and I gotta tell you, that momentary look of shock on the lady's face dissipated almost instantly when she saw I was a gringo. In that split second, she knew I wasn't going to steal her car or her baby. Gringos don't do that, at least not down in Latin America. After about 2 seconds, she actually smiled, and I probably could have sat there and had a conversation with her. But naturally, I felt pretty stupid and figured I'd better get out of there fast, lest the jealous husband return and then I'd have some splaining to do. Now, I don't know if that kind of thing's ever happened to you up in the first world. Maybe it has. I remember once up in a parking lot, I walked out of a building up to a car I thought was mine and tried for about a minute and a half to open it. The key didn't work because it wasn't my car. That's when you look around and hope no one sees what a horse's ass you are. But note, that little Office Depot incident was the very first time I actually made it into someone else's car and sat down. Meaning, of course, my key worked in that lock. How about that? So the lesson here is, when you buy a car, maybe you should have your lock registry changed. But that's not all. There's another episode in the Making a Fool of Myself department this week. Now, for all you longtime listeners, you probably remember way back when, probably 300 shows ago, when I explained the 2 times I was physically robbed down here in Latin America. Both of those incidents happened over 20 years ago, when I was really fresh and green and kind of deserved it, I guess. Now, they didn't get much. In one case, I lost a cheap Naugahyde briefcase that had a crappy cell phone in it worth maybe $25. And the other case, I was robbed right in a Burger King parking lot in broad daylight, and they got about $50 from me. Now, remember, that was over 20 years ago. Well, guess what? As the dice wheel roll, I got robbed again. At least I think I did, but maybe not. Here's what happened. A couple of days ago, I was in one of these giant, chaotic central markets. The way these things are set up, there are row upon row upon row of stationary little kiosks, and you see the same sellers day after day selling the same things. Some sell vegetables, some sell nuts or pirated CDs or purses or locks, electrical supplies, or even chickens. So if you visit the same market, you'll see the regulars over and over manning their little kiosks. Now, if it was just people selling things out of kiosks, it wouldn't be crazy and chaotic like it is. You got just as many people, perhaps more, walking with their little trays and shoulder bags and harnesses loaded down with crap that they're selling too. So they're walking right along with you, across from you, and in front of you, yelling out what they have and their prices. Now, you see some of these same people too over and over, but there are so many of those hawkers and walkers, as I call them. You might spot a few you recognize, but most of them are just a blur. Now remember, these guys are selling everything and anything. A lot of them are walking drugstores selling penicillin and ampicillin and all kinds of stuff, tetracycline, even rat poison, sometimes from the same bag. Oh, And if you're interested, they sell Viagra too and all its generic offshoots. But my advice, buy no drugs in those central markets. Anyway, there was this little guy, well, they're all little guys, walking around selling all different kind of doggy products, harnesses, chains, chew toys, stainless food bowls. Yep, he was just loaded down with that stuff, just walking around, yelling out prices, etc. And I did stop him because he had a chain I was interested in. He started the bidding at $4, and remember, this is always a bidding, haggling process, and I got him down to $2, and we both were happy. But wouldn't you know it, I didn't have any change, and I pulled out a 10, and he didn't have any change because, as you've heard me say in so many previous shows, Latin vendors are always at a loss for change. Even though up in the first world, that's probably the second rule of doing business. Number one, turn the lights on. Number two, have change. Well, as I figured, he said, I don't have change. I'll go get some. Now, this kind of thing is so frequent, it doesn't raise any red flags at all. The guy will just walk to the nearest kiosk 5 or 10 feet away and get some change. Though maybe he'll have to hit 2 or 3 kiosks because they won't have change either. So he checked at one kiosk. They didn't have change. He then walked away and signaled to me that he'd be right back, and he never did return. I never got my change or my dog chain. At least I should have taken the dog chain, huh? Now, I waited around maybe 10 minutes, and remember, it's chaotic. There's a lot of little kiosks. There's a lot to see and check out, so I wasn't really bored. So after figuring 10 minutes was enough, I walked up to the lady who he first asked change from and said, "Do you know that dog paraphernalia guy that tried to get change from you?" And she said, "No, not really, but he is around occasionally." And by the way, you'll like this. When you do go to one of those gigantic, fantastic markets like that, you can plan it so that you only have to go every 2 weeks or so. So then you'll really stock up and buy as much as you can because things are so cheap and in such quantity. Not to mention, so fresh, you won't believe it. And in that case, you'll find you just cannot carry that kind of quantity around with you. For example, let's say you want to buy 4 watermelons, normally around 50 or 60 cents each. And you want 4 papayas and 4 muskmelons, 50 or 60 cents each too. Well, by then, you're talking about 10 or 15, even 20 pounds, and there's no way you're going to drag that stuff around. You're going to have to haul it back to your car in a parking lot 3, 4, 5, even 6 blocks away. No fun at all, because remember, it's chaotic, and you're always trying to avoid people elbowing through and being pushed and shoved, in a nice kind of way, of course. No one's aggressive. But it is, in a word, chaotic, and when it rains, look out. So, believe me, I've tried that hauling the produce back and forth to your car, and it's no fun. Not to worry, you hire a porter. Little guys like that are available all over the place. They're carrying ropes and little bags, and they'll walk right up to you, especially since you're a gringo, and they love working for gringos because we always overpay, and that little guy will tail you everywhere, balancing things on his shoulders, his back, his head, you name it. And how much do these little guys charge? Well, I don't know if I mentioned this in the past, but generally they'll say, "Whatever you want to give me." I'm not kidding you. They almost always say that. And to me, and I found out this through some boots-on-the-ground experience, you should always settle on a price beforehand. Because if you lead them on a wild goose chase through that chaotic market for 30 or 40 minutes, once you get back to your car, and you hand them the usual rate, which is around 50 or 60 cents, they'll kind of stand there with a sad look on their face and kind of beg for more. And believe me, these guys look undernourished and are 1 foot away from sleeping under a bridge, believe me. Which is why you should always give them double or more the going rate, which is about 60 cents, believe it or not. So yes, a gringo will usually give a guy like that a buck or so. However, I've been to these big markets off the gringo tourist trail, and the only gringos I've ever seen there are the ones that came with me. And if a gringo does happen to show up once in a blue moon, you can spot them a mile away because they're always at least a head taller than everyone else. So anyway, what I like to do is to make that deal at the beginning, you know, 50 or 60 cents, and then when he finally gets back to the car and unloads, I'll give him twice that. Or more. So am I a nice guy, gringo, big spender, or what? A couple of thousand more trips to a market like that just might grease the skids enough for me to get into heaven. I mean, come on, everybody's got lower standards these days, right? So anyway, the guy with the dog paraphernalia stiffed me for $10. At least, that's what I'm thinking. However, my little porter guy says he sees that guy around there once in a while, and he told me that he'd get the chain for me and the change. So, we'll see what happens next time I'm in that vicinity. So, the moral of that story is, don't get upset when Latin vendors don't have change. That's normal. And if a vendor in a stationary kiosk is running out for change, don't worry, you'll get it because, well, they're regulars and that's their kiosk. But as for those walking hawkers, when you buy something from them, have correct change or nearly correct change, and if they take off with your dough, follow them. So did he or didn't he rip me off? Don't know yet. That day, as I kept on shopping in the market and looking for that guy out of the corner of my eye, I was talking to people and they all said, "Don't worry, word will get around and you'll most likely get your dough back." In fact, one guy said, "We get so few gringos through that it would be a shame if we scared off the scant few that came through." And get this, the same guy said they love it when gringos come through. First of all, because they're such a rarity, and second of all, because they never haggle. They pay what we ask. And in that case, no one's ripping the gringo off either. He's just being a bit clueless and doesn't know it. Now, there might be hundreds, even thousands of people in a market like that, and you just might never see a cop. And it really doesn't matter, because those places are self-policing, with a kind of loose-knit neighborhood watch system. If a vendor doesn't conform, they'll just run him out on a rail. Or so I've heard. Oh, and by the way, when you're in one of those big chaotic markets, you can't help but notice all the ladies with their young babies strapped to their backs. Sometimes two little babies and a couple of kids in tow as well. So there's mom with the kids and sometimes with a big basket balanced on her head, doing a deal at a kiosk and at the same time talking on a cell phone. And you might ask yourself, how could they stay on the phone so long? I mean, they're only making about 10 or 15 bucks a day. Well, as it turns out, these days in Latin America, cell phones are so cheap, like around 10 to 15 bucks for the bottom end ones, that anyone, even people living in tin shacks, can afford them. But then you gotta wonder, how can they keep gabbing away? They're on the phone all the time, sitting in a little kiosk. You'll see it when you're down there shopping. And, of course, phone minutes cost, right? Well, it's because now there's so much competition within cell phone companies. They have these new friend and family plans now. When you buy a cell phone, many of the companies will allow you to plug in 3 or 4 of your favorite numbers, and you can talk to them unlimited. So, since your favorite 2 or 3 numbers are free, they're gabbing away all the time. Sound familiar? In fact, I took a really nice photo in the market of an indigenous lady carrying 2 babies, a huge basket on her head, while talking at the cell phone at the same time. I mean, who'd have thunk, huh? Here's a lady who washes her clothes in the river, and yet she's got a piece of technology in her hands that costs 15 bucks, and it's got more computer processing power than the first lunar landing module. In fact, here's how it shakes out. As of 2014, there are more cell phones in Latin America than people. That's 500 million people with over 500 million cell phones. Now, that's about the same per capita as the U.S. So how could that be, you ask? Well, in the U.S., everybody's got expensive smartphones, and in Latin America, 90% of all phones are those prepaid throwaway types. And here's the real striking difference. I'll bet you didn't know that 60% of adult Latins do not even have a bank account. And of course, that would be the dirt poor, people living in shacks, etc. But, you know, you have to admire them for that, because banks and bank accounts, well, all that did up in the first world back in 2007 and 8 was lead to a world of hurt and ruin. Okay, on that note, let's take an email. This one comes with the subject title that says, "Guess what? I just had a Johnny is right moment." And it comes from Mark. It says, "Johnny, your show is amazing and hilarious. I've been obsessed with Latin American ever since I was in Mexico over 10 years ago. I hope to get down there in the next 18 months to live with my family. Number one, I just wanted to share a testament to everything you say about Latin American governments. I always found it entertaining to hear you describe the politicians and how corrupt they are, but part of me always wondered if they could really be that bad. Well, guess what? I sat next to a Latin guy on a plane last week, and when I asked him where he was originally from, he said, Nicaragua, the same place I'm looking to go to live for a while, and I'm actually going to get some boots on the ground there in a few months to check it out. So, he got really excited when I told him I was going to Nicaragua, and then we got to talking. Get this. He was on his way back home from a protest at the Nicaraguan embassy in Miami. He said he left 22 years ago from Nicaragua after being tortured and almost killed for speaking out against the government when he was younger. He now lives in Chicago, but is apparently fairly well known as an anti-NICA government activist in Nicaragua. When I asked him about Ortega, now that really got him going. Anyway, It was a fascinating conversation, and it just made me realize that everything you say about scumbag politicians is true. And now for a question. As I mentioned, I'm planning to get down to Nicaragua within the next 18 months with my wife and four young kids. Now, I've heard you recommend against bringing kids down there, but one of the main reasons you mentioned was so they don't hang out with those spoiled helicopter school rich kids. We homeschool our kids and will probably continue to do so, so I don't see that as a concern for us. If we choose Nicaragua, for example, I know the people are very welcoming of children. My kids would certainly learn Spanish, and it would be an experience of a lifetime for them. It seems to me there are lots of benefits to bringing kids down. Both my wife and I have experience living in the third world, so we speak decent Spanish and think we are up for the challenge. Are there any other reasons you might advise against lugging kids down there? Also, my son, the oldest child, would be about 9. If for some reason we found ourselves staying down there into his teen years, should I be concerned with what might happen with a teenage gringo amongst a bunch of teenage Latinas? Because that's another concern. I know that's a lot of stuff, but thanks for considering this email. Well, sure, Mark, and thanks for the kind kudos. Oh, and just one more thing about maggot-brained sociopathic politicians. They're everywhere. Every country. Not just in Latin America, but they do stick out down here simply because there's about zero transparency, and these guys with their self-esteem in the gutter have to show off everywhere and every place they go. I mean, you know, they have to have the helicopters and the bulletproof SUVs, and let's not forget the entourages of pot-bellied pompous bodyguards with long-range halitosis on par with their political charges. That, it seems, is a prerequisite for the job. Oh, and by the way, you know what really irks me? I know, nothing irks me, right? Oh, yes, it does. Well, what you might not know is in August and September, a lot of Latin American countries have their Independence Day. And get this, all the TV news stations down here show live-on-the-spot reports of their own illegal citizens up in the States partying and carrying on, waving their Latin homeland flags from faraway Chicago, New York, Cleveland, and Miami. Teary-eyed and sad, longing for the country they abandoned, waving banners and carrying on for the folks back home. So in thousands of Latin neighborhoods in big cities up in the States, throngs of illegals are celebrating with tears in their eyes over tacos, tamales, chicharrones, and beer. So then you have to ask, if they're so nationalistic and so damn sad about leaving, why in the hell didn't they stay? Of course, it's all in pursuit of that fantasy they call Le Sueño Americano, the American dream. So those local Latin TV channels that do those reports are providing priceless PR for millions of other uneducated, poor, low-class Latins who are convinced they have to get a piece of that Sueño Americano themselves. And the truth is, they really don't want to blend in. They want to create their own little piece of that Honduran, Guatemalan, Nicaraguan, Salvadorian ghetto wherever they land, Chicago, Miami, Cleveland, New York. And if you think that's a racist statement, well, just talk to my brother up in Chicago. He's in the construction business, and he says he meets second-generation Latinos all the time. That means they've been born in the States and are citizens that speak so little English they need an interpreter. Now, I'm not digressing here, but let me just point out that the other day I ran into an old expat friend of mine who I first met when he came down to one of my expat wisdom seminars. He calls himself John Galt and has a very excellent blog. He's a man of many talents. In fact, I want to be just like him when I grow up. Anyway, we were discussing all the locals we meet down here and their desire to get a piece of the American dream as they perceive it. They all want to somehow escape to the United States, and many of them have already and have been deported. We run into them all the time. Anyway, I mentioned to Mr. Galt that in the last year or two, I've been talking to local Latins, asking them why they have this burning desire to go to Chicago and Miami. Now, I know they all love their country. They go nuts during their independence celebrations, and they're crazy about their soccer teams. They've got more stupid, illogical patriotism in their little fingers than a whole busload of Americans. I tell you, they buy their flags, put them on their bikes, their houses, their cars. They cry when they sing the national anthem and celebrate like there's no tomorrow when they have their Independence Day. In fact, some of them don't go back to work for a week because they're nursing such bad hangovers. Latins are really the poster children for irrational patriotism. Their country slogan should actually be, "Ask not what your country can do for you," because if you do, your leaders will just laugh in your face. And yet they risk everything to sneak into the States for the so-called American dream. And then once they get there, they try to create little Nicaragua. And truthfully, they really don't want to go to the United States, but it's all about the money. Believe me, all the stuff you've heard about people going to the United States for a political asylum and because they're being tortured and the narcos are after them, whatever. Well, that's because of one plain fact. The poor, sweaty masses of Latins who live in tin shacks with no hot running water, etc., they live in the absolute worst neighborhood ghettos, which are rife with crime. Why wouldn't they be? So if they made more money, they could move out, right? And that's what they all tell me. So I say then, considering that the average wage in Latin America is about $200 to $300 a month, now depending what country, that's anywhere from 40% to 60% of the population. So when you ask them, because they're so patriotic and they actually would love to remain in their own countries, what would it take for them to stay? They say, you know, if they had more money, they could move out of those bad neighborhoods. So what you hear up in the first world at the 6 o'clock news is correct. They're all trying to escape some kind of terrible condition. Now, they all say if they made more money, they'd move out of those terrible neighborhoods, but who knows? So when talking to the sweaty masses, the 40 to 60% that want that American dream, and you ask them, what would it take? What kind of minimum salary would they be happy with to remain in their own country and have no more desire to leave for the States? Well, you know what the standard answer is? $500 a month. That's it. They say that on about twice what they normally make a month now. They'd be able to live with dignity in nicer neighborhoods and wouldn't have the desire to head up to the States. Now, no, that's not a pie-in-the-sky wish. They're asking for $500 a month, which is still less than half of poverty wages up in the States. Come on. Nope, they're not saying they'd stay in their own countries for $2,000 a month or even $1,000 a month. They're saying $500 a month. That's $125 a week. And even though when you break it down, it's only $3 an hour, it does make sense. That's why when up in the States, illegals can send $100 or $200 a month back to their families in Nicaragua or Guatemala or whatever. Though to us, it might sound like peanuts. The truth is, the illegal family member up north becomes the instant hero and savior of the family. Why? Because he's kicked up the family household income to guess what? That magic number, around $500 a month. Whoops, we're getting towards the end now, so I'll comment on the rest of Mark's email regarding the pros and cons of bringing kids down to Latin America on next week's show, so stay tuned.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.